Join us.
Let's walk the talk.
This is 702.
It's reported that in South Africa that 31% of men and 68% of women are obese, and the National Health and Nutrition Survey shows that a 13% obesity rate among children aged 1 to 5, 13% aged 1 to 5, twice that global average of 6.1%. And the recent research also says that around getting people with obesity to lose weight and keeping it off is that it's near impossible without adding medicine or surgery into the treatment mix. I know some politicians have been accused of using surgery to lose weight, and whilst I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I'm not an expert. The expert is Dr. Noma Temba Chandiwana, who is a research clinician at Wits University's Ezintsha Research Unit. Dr. Noma Temba, really appreciate your time. Welcome to 702. Good morning.
Good morning, Thabo, and good morning to you and your listeners on this very interesting and topical topic.
And I'm glad that we have you, because it's not only interesting, it's necessary, but it also needs to be informed by facts from people like you who look at these issues very closely, just beyond the purview of some of us who just offer an opinion that is not guided. So, I mean, I would assume, Dr. Noma Temba, that obesity is becoming a pandemic in South Africa, or a serious issue in South Africa, and we are told by research that it needs to be taken seriously. Let's look at what can be done from the side of medicine. What is out there? And before we get into other details, is it just about exercise, healthy eating, or does medication play an important role therein?
So, you know, it's a good thing that you ask. You know, a lot of people don't yet consider obesity a chronic disease, which it is. Much like hypertension or type 2 diabetes, obesity is a chronic, complex, relapsing disease. So in our toolbox for treatment, we have the same things that we have for other chronic, non-communicable diseases. Mm. We've got our medication, we've got our lifestyle interventions, diet and exercise, and also for obesity, we've got surgery as well. So we've got a few options, but there's no secret bullet, we've got great medications and things that work, but a lot of things have to be used in combination.
And before we get into the real crux of the this conversation, which is mainly about the new trend and studies of now using medication to treat obesity, are we able to define it? And I'm saying that reservedly, because a lot of people say, Tabo, you don't know what obesity is. But I'm just saying, from a clinician's viewpoint, are you looking at BMI? How do we define it?
That's a very interesting question. So BMI that we use is not a great measure of Tabo's weight, if that makes sense. Mm. So it's good for populations. You know, it gives us good indications when we look at bigger populations. But for individual health, it doesn't tell us much. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. We saw a Rugby World Cup, you know, last year.
Yes.
So if you look at, you know, an average rugby player, their BMI will be quite high. But those people are very fit. They've got low adiposity rate. So meaning their fat to lean mass ratio is not as much as perhaps someone else who has got a similar height and weight. So do you see, those people could have exactly the same BMI, but it's not telling us enough information about their health.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and also BMIs change, you know. So for example, with the research that we know, BMIs change for different sexes and for different races. So a BMI cutoff, for example, a Black African woman, BMI is of about 32 with the research that we have, might not be considered unhealthy. But for different races, for example, in Asian people, BMIs of 23 and above are considered unhealthy. Mm-hmm. So there are also different things that we can look at. But a simple measure that I like is using waist circumference. Mm-hmm. Does waist circumference tell us whether that fat that is around your belly, whether it is, because that is what is a good indicator for a layperson or even the average doctor, or if the fat that you have can negatively impact your weight. So measuring your waist circumference is a really good and more accurate measure for individual. But population, BMIs are good because they give us how a population is doing.
Yes, on a larger, almost global scale. But then if you had to look at the granular indications, then you'd have to take a different set of measurement altogether. And you would find different types of obesity. I'm supposing, and I'm not imposing this on you. I would guess that you would find skinny fat individuals, whilst they are lean and skinny elsewhere. Perhaps the belly is a bit protruding, to put it mildly.
So that's actually an interesting thing. So you're talking about what we would call as visceral fat, which is fat that's underneath. So the fat around your organs, which is dangerous fat. So the skinny fat is a tricky one because most people don't know. Like, for example, I don't know if you know this, we call it metabolic dysfunction-associated liver disease. It was formerly known as fatty liver, right? But we try not to use that term anymore.
Sure.
Because it's a bit stigmatizing. But, you know, that is something that you can see in leaner people, right?
Mm.
And that, so that's giving us an indication of how much fat someone could have inside.
Mm.
But broadly speaking, how we define overweight and obesity, if we're using population, so for overweight, it would be a BMI over 25, and then obesity is classified into three categories, class 1, which is a BMI between 30 and 35, and then 35 and 40 is class 2. Above 40 is then considered class 3. But there are also other more interesting stages. There's this staging system called the Edmonton staging system that doesn't just look at fat. It looks at other indicators as well.
Mm.
So there are different ways that we can measure obesity.
Sure. And before we get lost in this rabbit hole of minutely defining all these aspects of obesity and being overweight, let's assume now that you've established that you are overweight and you are dealing with obesity. Is there medication specifically for your type of obesity that can be taken, and would that be over the counter or must that be prescribed?
We have, you know, and that's such an interesting question and quite topical, you know, for anyone who's been looking at the media. We literally have so many options right now, not all available in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have new drugs. So before, we used to tell people, eat less, exercise. But what does that actually mean? And it doesn't quite help enough for you to lose the kind of weight that you need to manage your health conditions. So we've got a few things in our things, and I'll speak specifically about drugs that are available in South Africa. You do need to see your healthcare provider, so you can see from your general practitioner to an endocrinologist. They can, you know, prescribe whatever is appropriate for you. So the first class is something we call a GLP. So it's a class of drugs. So these are the injectables. So I'm sure in the media you've heard lots of different names. Ozempic being a big one, but at certain dosages, so at a higher dose, we use that to treat obesity. So that's not available in South Africa as yet, but we've got another drug in that same class that is available. So how these drugs work is either a daily injection or a weekly injection, and they work by, you know how my patients describe it, by quietening down the food noise. So if you're thinking about food all the time, et cetera, if you're quietening it down from like an 8 to about a 2. So you feel fuller for longer. When you eat something, you feel satisfied. So they work by delaying gastric emptying. So they're really, really great drugs.
And that sounds like
class of drugs.
How linked How is that linked to the thought process? And I don't want to mention the psychological effect thereof. I'm just trying to establish, is it maybe delaying a desire to eat and based on what you are thinking about, or does it naturally make you feel as though you have had something to eat?
So how this works, you know, so eating, I mean, food is delicious. And the things that are delicious are the things that are not good for us, right? Mm. So these drugs, so, you know, when you eat food and that feeling of, you know, I crave something, it's delicious. So they work in two ways. They work in parts of the brain, and they also work by releasing GLP, which is a natural hormone. So some people who are slimmer actually produce more of this hormone naturally. So it's a naturally occurring hormone that has been packaged into an injectable. I mean, I'm saying things simply.
Sure.
So it works in two ways. So one, by you not craving and wanting to eat food, but once you eat it, you can eat smaller amounts, feel fuller for longer.
Okay.
Because we tend to eat bigger portions than we should.
Unnecessarily in most instances, because we just want to have this fulfilling. But Dr. Adomatemba, give me 1 second. I'm taking a break and I'm coming back to you. We have quite a lot to discuss, but we have very little time. So I'll come back to you, and feel free to send your questions through if you'd like to interact with Dr. Nomatemba Chandiwane, a research clinician at Wits University at Ezintsha Research Unit. Health and Wellness on 702-12-212.
For more about 702, go to primemediaplus.com.
10 minutes to 12 o'clock. Dr. Nomatemba Chandiwane is my guest, the research clinician at Wits University's Ezintsha Research Unit. And we're talking about obesity and some of the medication you can use, medicines you can use to fight obesity. Doc, I have quite a lot to ask, and we don't have a lot of time, and I want also to bring in some of the voice notes that have been coming through on 072-702-1702. When people opt, and let me rephrase it, is there a workable solution from yourselves as clinicians to provide a suggestion for someone to rather go under the knife, to go through the surgery route? And is that the worst possible? Then you don't, there isn't any other help other than someone going under the knife when they're obese. How does that come about? Sorry, Dr. Nomatemba, I just forgot to press your button there. Please start again.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay, so for people who have higher BMIs, surgery is a good option. And also, there are different types of surgeries. So there are more, and it's generally safe. So we've got a lot of data now, you know, over 10, 15 years of data of these different surgeries. So some of them, they can cut part of your stomach or part of your intestines, and that shrinks your stomach. And these surgeries actually really do help a lot. But what's also interesting now, we have things we call minimally invasive surgery, bariatric surgery. So this is like you have two holes in your stomach that actually don't cut you up, and they're able to do minimally invasive surgery. It's a day procedure. People can be in and out. So surgery is safer than it's been in a long time. And it's a really, really good option, actually.
For specific patients. Sure. Is it a shortcut to losing weight? Perhaps I don't want to run like Clement and do a 42-kilometer marathon in London and train for it all year long. And I'm just thinking, I want to kill this belly. Is that a shortcut to doing it?
It as a shortcut. You know what's interesting? Obesity is the only disease that patients feel, or people feel, they have to deal with on their own. So for example, if someone had diabetes and they took, I don't know, insulin, you wouldn't consider it a shortcut. Mm. It's just something in the toolbox. So we should think of obesity in the same way. So if surgery is indicated for you and it's something that's affordable for the specific patient, I think it's something in our toolbox and people should use it.
Sure. And can it come back if I have taken that route? if I had gone under the knife or the other method that you've just mentioned of two holds, is there a chance of the weight coming back?
There is a chance. And this is the one thing that I want to say to people. There is no magic bullet to weight. So I think, you know, we read a lot of things in the media that if you do this, then the weight will disappear forever. Like any disease, you still need to manage it. So some people can have surgery and after 2 or 3 years can start to gain weight, right?
Mm.
So with that, that's when the drugs may come in. So even sometimes with the drugs, which work really well, anti-obesity medications, if you stop taking them, the weight will come back. So as we approach weight, we should look at it holistically, right?
Mm.
So it's just not one indication. So we've got the medication that we have. Some people might need a dietitian. Some people might need behavioral help. And, you know, mental health has been such a big issue,
sure.
Especially if you think of how we were and how we gained weight during COVID. It's because we were watching TV, we were anxious, and the banana bread that we're baking, etc.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mental health and so forth. So some patients may need a mental health intervention as well. So I think there is no magic bullet. And I say this to all, you know, 702 land. If anyone promises you that if you do this, you will do this, you will lose, I don't know, X amount and it will be gone forever.
Yeah.
It's really preying on our insecurities because weight is so personal and it's so difficult. We all have struggled with weight at some point in our lives.
Before we say goodbye, please speak briefly about the safety of these new medicines, especially for losing weight.
So there have been a lot of clinical trials. So these medicines were initially for people with diabetes, and they found that in clinical trials, people were losing weight. So at higher dosages, these medications work well for weight loss. So with like with any medication, there are some side effects, but they are really, really good drugs. And right now, the sort of drugs that we have actually are competing with the sort of weight loss you would have with surgery. So we now call that bariatric medicine opposed to bariatric surgery. So these drugs, and there's some that are on the horizon in the next few years that are really have dramatic, we're talking about 20, 25% weight loss in a space of a year or two,
Before we say goodbye, I mean, there are people listening to us and saying, Thabo, you didn't touch on half of the things. How do people get hold of you if you are open to that or perhaps as Insha Research Unit? But I mean, you've dispensed very critical information. How can other people get in touch beyond our discussion here on the radio?
So I think if they Google our site, they'll be able to find me where we work. Yeah.
Okay.
If they need more information, I'm available for that too.
And you'd Google Dr. Noma Temba Chandiwana, research clinician at Wits University's Ezintsha Research Unit. I really loved talking to you. We should do it again with more time. Really appreciate it, Doc. All the best to you. It's 3 minutes to 12 o'clock.